I want to give away some t-shirts. I've got a bunch of Closed Monday t-shirts, and all I need you to do is screenshot on your phone or take a picture on your computer, on your laptop, whatever you're listening on, and share that image on Instagram. Tag Closed Monday Podcast. Tag the James Beard Foundation. You can tag me personally too. Post it on your social and then DM me saying, hey, I want my t-shirt. Send me your address and I'll hook you up. So trying to grow the audience, trying to get some massive exposure, trying to get some big name guests. So we need some big exposure. And if you guys could help me out with this, I'd really appreciate it. Thank you. What is up, guys? Welcome to Closed Monday. My name is Kyle and Sarah, and this is the show for restaurant owners, for chefs, for culinary students, for startup restaurants, anyone brave enough to take on the challenge of running a restaurant and the pursuit of being what we like to call a restaurant entrepreneur. This is your absolute lifeline, your go-to for real world, no nonsense, in-depth chats and war stories from people who have been in your shoes. Now, you're all on the same quest here, looking for that perfect solution, that perfect piece of technology that's gonna streamline your operations, the killer marketing strategy, the new social media platform that's gonna put your restaurant on the map, the rock solid suppliers who've always got your back. But let's not be naive, there's a lot more to this. Most importantly, things like capital raising, making sense of insurance, and playing real estate like a professional, that's all part of the package. And one of my favorite parts, by the way. But what you need to understand is that each one of these challenges, they're really just opportunities. And as industry veterans, myself, my guests, we're gonna bring battle-hardened knowledge and cutting-edge insights to the table every single week. We've been in it. We've had our neck on the line. We've lost money. We've made money. We've had staff. We've lost staff. We know how it impacts our personal life. We're gonna help you navigate this entire business. Our goal, sole goal, is to give you the information to reach your goals while you stay true to what's most important to you. And what I know, what's important to you are things like quality, hospitality, innovation, sustainability, staying ahead of the curve, staying up with trends, and of course, providing an unforgettable guest experience. So whether you're a seasoned professional, you're a restaurant entrepreneur, or you're a rookie about to jump into your first business, grab a seat. Pour yourself a drink, a cup of coffee, put your AirPods on, grab the dog, go for a walk, hit the treadmill, sit on the couch, whatever you're gonna do, we're gonna drop some serious knowledge on you, and it starts right now. Welcome to Closed Monday.
Hey everyone, Avi Gorin, CEO and co-founder of Marquee, and I wanna talk about the customer journey for a second. You never know as a restaurant owner where your guests are truly coming from. End of the day, we do see some patterns around two types of search behaviors, direct versus discovery. Direct search, for an example, would be jumping into Google and saying Cali barbecue hours, right? I know where I want to go to eat, but I'm missing a key detail. I need a little bit more information. Discovery, which is the bulk of searches, is barbecue in San Diego, restaurants near me, takeout near me, right? One of the best ways to be found for more discovery searches is leveraging keywords. Reviews are basically free content for you to leverage. Think about keywords that are relevant to your brand, your location, and include as many of those in your review responses as possible, right? How can you go about doing this? Let's set up reports. Utilize tools like Google Trends. Find out what's going on in your area and how you can help leverage these keywords and review responses, because someone else is doing that, right? If you need some examples, you could do anything from including summer menu, gluten-free menu, leverage specific menu items like the dreaded and beloved spice pumpkin anything in your review responses, right? Let them know what's coming. Let your reviewers know something they should come back and try. And of course, if all of this just seems overwhelming and daunting because you're already running a restaurant and have enough on your plate, just leverage the team at Marquee to do this for you. We handle all of this. We're experts in this space. We can automate this, so it's just another item that you know you are taking care of. Again, that's marquee.com, M-A-R-Q-I-I, M-A-R-Q-I-I.com. Know you, However, we did recently buy MARQUII.com. So if you do misspell it, we got you. You'll still find us. We can still help you.
All right, guys, welcome back to Closed Monday. Today we are having a friend of ours from the James Beard Association, Dr. Ann McBride, Vice President of Programs. Ann, thanks for joining us this morning. Sorry for the hiccups earlier.
No worries, Kyle. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, of course. So I've been reviewing the report you had sent over, the James Beard report, and it's really, really super interesting. And I think it's something that our listeners are going to find very insightful. But overall, it seems like we've made some real progress this year. What do you think?
We have. I mean, it's remains, while this is the most, 2023 was the most stable year we've had in 3 years, basically, since 2019, it remains a challenging environment for the restaurant industry. There's no doubt. Costs are increasing and people are being more cost aware when they're going out. But there's much more stability and it makes planning a little bit easier.
Yeah. I think let's also just talk about how in-depth you guys went with this, because James Beard Foundation, a lot of you guys think of it in terms of awards, right? And maybe this is going to be an eye-opener for you in that they are looking to support the industry with these findings. And we'll get into some of the advocacy stuff later on. But this survey was gathered over 250 responses from chefs across 44 states, which is a fairly significant segment of the industry. And it had a collective reach of over 14 million annual covers and 3.2 million Instagram followers. That's pretty impressive. I mean, that's an in-depth study there. So you had touched on before the stability and the challenges. I mean, one of the things I hear constantly are rising food costs, how they affect operations, along with the economy affecting how frequently the public is dining out. What specific strategies can restaurants adopt to kind of cope with this?
Some of the strategies that we see, and some of that is captured in the report, is definitely around menu planning. So shortening menus, simplifying menus, which can allow you to also simplify on the staff side a little bit, on the back of the house front. We last year, we saw more people cutting shifts. We're seeing a little bit less of that this year. And one thing that wasn't necessarily in the report, but that we see a lot through people who participate in our programs, is alternative revenue streams. And I think that was overall a big lesson since 2020. Relying solely on butts in seats can be challenging. So many more restaurateurs are looking to do other things, whether it's CPG, whether it's merch, whether it's things like that, that they can do to help cushion the blow a little bit of all these increased costs.
Yeah, I've been seeing a significant increase in that, right? Like selling their salad dressing, selling their sauces. I've even seen, what I think is super cool, a lot of these chefs leaning into their content creation more. So creating some of their recipes online for people to sort of see how they're made at home. Is that something you've seen some chefs lean into as well, their content creation and their social media presence?
100%. I think that's something that everyone became a lot more comfortable doing, you know, when suddenly having to do demos from their home kitchen to just stay busy and stay occupied. So we're seeing this for sure. That might not always be revenue generating, but that certainly helps build an audience.
Yeah, I think that ultimately, hopefully, you know, we always talk about on the show is creating a sort of that digital hospitality, right? Like that I can reach you beyond the four walls of my restaurant, because so many folks, when everything went down a couple of years ago, they weren't sure how they were, like, so used to greeting people when they walked in the door. How am I going to reach them? How am I going to connect? And I think that's a very interesting aspect of the business.
And it also helps keep you top of mind for people. I mean, I think we've all made plans with friends and you're looking for a place to go and you're scrolling Instagram at the same time. It's like, oh yeah, this restaurant I haven't gone to in a while is right there on my feed and I want to go back and eat there.
Yeah, there's, you know, sometimes it's a you know, how some of these restaurant folks are. They're very focused on what they do. And they're like, they don't get the connection between staying top of mind. And we always say, like, if you're top of mind when they're hungry, they're going to think of you first. And that equates to reservations, hopefully. So I love seeing that.
I mean, not to make this all about social media, but one thing I always caution restaurateurs, though, is do not rely solely on social media, because you do not control this. You don't control Instagram. You don't control algorithms. You don't control the mailing list you think you have from your followers. So always build your own on the side, too.
Great. That is a fantastic point. And that's probably a whole separate other podcast on its own. So yeah, we won't waste too much time with that. Yeah. But another thing that I thought was super interesting here were some of the trends that you guys have touched on in the report. And the length, guys, it's a 25-page report. It's beautifully written. It is very simple to understand. And I'm very visual, so the graphics and the graphs are fantastic and easy to digest. But one of the trends that I saw on the customer side were that 36% of chefs reported more customers in 2023 than 2022. But 37% saw a decrease.
Correct.
What's behind that, you think?
And that's something that we hear a lot anecdotally. So the point of the report was to put a lot of data behind everything that we're hearing so that then, you know, journalists like you are getting interested in this and covering. We've had a lot of media attention around it, which is really great because it helps everyone from media to politicians to diners understand the current landscape of restaurants and the challenges facing the industry. And I think this notion of some restaurants have more customers, some have fewer, you see that all the time. You can be walking around on a rainy Tuesday in Brooklyn and some restaurants will be packed. There'll be three people deep at the bar waiting for a table. And then right next door is a completely empty restaurant. And so that part, it's hard to explain. I mean, buzz obviously always plays a role there. Some of that is not necessarily new, but it feels like it's been further amplified. And some of it must suddenly relate to diners being a little bit more cautious with their dining out dollars and being forced to go out a little bit less because every time you go out costs more than it did in 2019 or even in 2022.
Yeah. I mean, do you think that, you know, I mean, the math would say so, but the increase in revenue that we're seeing in the restaurant industry is doing so well, it is a function of having to raise prices, right? Like, I mean, prices have gone up, people are paying more for this food, and it's obviously, like you said, impacting how frequently they dine out. In the face of that, do you see, you know, any trends that chefs and operators can adopt to, you know, help, you know, create more margin for themselves in the face of this?
So what we're actually seeing is that while there are more, the check average has gone up, profits have gone down. 53% of respondents report having lower profits. So we're paying more for dining out, but chefs are not making more money. Their margins remain the same, you know, small 2-3%, 2-5% margins on average, because it's those increases are straight passed through to their suppliers, to their staff, et cetera. Mm-hmm. And it's making no difference for them to the bottom line, to the contrary.
Yeah. I think that's a great point. I think one of the best things that came out of this whole thing, if there is a best thing, is the education on restaurant math. Yeah. I think so many folks were, you know, there's always this image folks have in their head of, you know, the restaurant owners making so much money and how dare they raise prices. But I think something else that you guys touched on here, which is fantastic, is that increased consumer education. Can you talk about that and how that may shape the future of the industry, or at least the future of this year?
Mm-hmm. So that was a response that came up very frequently from our survey participants. The fact that their diners understand better the realities of the restaurant industry. So they understand what they're paying for. They want the staff to be paid fair wages, to have health insurance. They want more sustainable food products on the table, etc. So they feel that customers are more knowledgeable around these things and want to support restaurants that are doing the right thing, even if it means paying a little bit more. Course, we did have answers on the flip side of that, with some respondents saying that customers were worse than ever. So similar to some restaurants being full, some not. Not every customer is going to be a pleasant customer. And some of it, especially with increased prices, comes increased expectations on the side of diners, I think. The experience needs to be even more perfect than before. So there's definitely a lot of friction points between the realities and the expectations that still happen.
I love what you said there, because I think that's one of the things that operators can focus on that costs virtually no money, which is the experience. Yes. How significant is that? Because I see it as a huge issue, because when everything shut down, I wasn't like, where am I going to eat? I was just upset that I wasn't going to be able to have that experience of sitting at the bar with my wife and having a great cocktail and having a great meal and interacting with the owner and the staff. How have these operators approached that? Are they putting an emphasis on that in general, would you say?
I mean, this is more anecdotal than anything captured by data, but I think a lot of it's posed a challenge because it's been so hard to staff restaurants. So it's made creating that experience harder because you may not always have the level of staff, the number and the experience level of staff that you might need to deliver a perfect experience. Mm-hmm. That said, it's still very possible. It's something that chefs should absolutely continue to insist on more than ever because of this tension. If you feel that you've spent $200 on pizza for you and your wife, and you know the experience wasn't great, if there was great attention to service, you felt special on your night out, et cetera, you're more likely to go back or at least to end the evening happy. So it's certainly something that chefs need to continue prioritize more than anything, the experience for the diner.
I love that you said that because I know it's tough to measure that, but that feeling that you get, right? Like I think that you go out, you have a pizza, you have a great experience, but if you are not having a great experience, all of a sudden that $200 seems, you're like, this is crazy. I feel insulted. They didn't pay attention to me. But if you have a great experience, you'll be back next week, right? Exactly. I mean, that $200 is obviously relevant to everybody. But I think that's a great point. I'm glad that we touched on that because it's something that operators are sort of losing touch with. You know, I think, you know, when you're making 2-5% and you've been doing this for so long, it can be easy to sort of let that slide. So I'm glad that we touched on that.
And also so many people are so burnt out, right? I mean, it's been such an exhausting, we're actually starting the year with a wellness series, focusing on body, mind, staff, et cetera, because it's so important because sometimes you just don't have it in you to just go that extra mile that will make someone feel special because you have nothing left in the tank. So I think it's really, really key that chefs and operators take this first half of 2024 to really recenter on themselves and find what they need to keep going because the challenges are not over.
Yeah, I love that because for so long the industry was like, this is what it is, right? Like this is the grind. This is, you're supposed to feel that way. But we've had some other guests on here, Hasla Vilas, talking about things like that and how it can lead to other issues for chefs and owners. But I mean, it goes back to me with what they say on the airplane, right? Put your mask on first. Take care of yourself. You'll be in the best position to take care of everybody else. So I love that, and we'll look forward to checking that out. But in regards to the report, what else stands out here for you that is something that operators should really be focusing on? Because there is so much, and you can get buried in the numbers a little bit, but what is really something that they could take away from here, in your opinion, that's a really sort of, I don't know, a hack, a little gold nugget that you think that they should focus on? If anything.
Not to put
you on the spot.
A really key thing is to not be afraid to, and this time of year is a perfect time to do this, to really take a step back and look at everything. What would you do if you were to start your restaurant today? What would be your business plan? What would be your ideal margin? What would be your ideal staff number, your ideal menu size, et cetera, under the parameters of today? So I think, especially because it's so easy to be so trapped in the day-to-day when you're working in a restaurant, we're all victim of that no matter what we do. Take the time to analyze your business. Cancel what you need to cancel, close if you need to, but really spend a good amount of time looking at that and see, okay, well, you know, this is something that is not sustainable at today's cost, whether it's a, whether it's opening hours, whether it's type of food, some menu items that need to go. What still allows you to express your vision, your creative expression, et cetera, but still within the parameters of the current economic reality of 2024. And 23 in the case of the report. I think that's something that's not enough people make the time to do, because it feels like, oh, I'll do it tomorrow, I'll do it next week, yeah, because it's such a big thing. But it's really, really crucial to do that and to do it as if you were to do a health checkup.
Yeah, I own my own restaurants for 15 years, and I know that feeling, because you immediately, when somebody says, like, let's say, take this item off the menu, it's too expensive. In my mind, I immediately get an image of the 20 guests that I know personally that order it and love it.
Yeah.
And I couldn't possibly take that off the menu. They're going to be devastated. But I can tell you, they get over it. They get over it quickly. And it's just an emotional attachment that as operators and chefs, we have to these things. It's really taking an analytical look at your business and at yourself, right? And that's not always easy for anybody to do in any position, particularly when you're serving a lot of people and your goal is to be hospitable.
Correct. And I think, one of the what we were talking about in relation to the report around consumer education, part of it is really, when reading through the reports, I would hope that your listeners think about what is the realities for them there, what do they identify with, and how do they communicate that with their customers better. Because if you're just taking someone's favorite dish off the menu, of course you're going to point it out next time they come. What can you communicate through your social, through your newsletters, one-on-one when they're coming in, around the realities? And not make it a downer, or like, oh, we took this out because we can't afford to have it on the menu anymore. No, nobody wants to be bummed out when they go out to dinner. But what can you share instead of talking about what's no longer there? And a lot of the respondents did simplify and cut down their menus, the majority. Talk about what is there. Do you have a new relationship with a farmer, with a supplier, et cetera, that you want to highlight? Focus on the positive and make your customers excited to have what is on your menu and what you're doing, not what you used to do.
Hands down, the most embarrassing mistake I made as a restaurant owner was hiring the wrong accountant and trusting that he was doing the right thing. Now, the main thing that he was in charge of was sales tax. And long story short, didn't get paid on time, didn't get paid in full. And our little 40-seat restaurant wound up owing the state of New York $180,000 in sales tax. But that was before Davo. Davo automates your sales tax. It integrates with your POS, so it automatically sets aside the sales tax funds daily. Then, when it comes time to remit these funds to the state, Davo files and pays the sales tax for you on time and in full. It's easier. Take a little bit out every day as opposed to this big chunk due at the end of the month or at the end of the quarter. It would have changed my business, would have changed really my life. Because let's face it, when you're running a restaurant, those bills that are due, they keep you awake at night. Not with Davo. It's all taken care of. So it integrates with your POS. So whether you have Toast, Square, Clover, Lightspeed, SkyTab, whatever you have, Revel, they integrate with them and they're adding new partners every day. So you never have to worry about sales tax again. In the show notes, there's a link where you can schedule a call with the customer success team. Let them know that you heard about Davo on the Close Monday podcast and they'll hook you up. Never worry about sales tax ever again. Keep your eye on what matters, which is running your business day in, day out, and let Davo take care of the sales tax.
Yeah, authenticity, transparency. I think that's where some of the social media and the marketing comes in handy, right? Like, hey, guys, I know things like romaine lettuce and cauliflower have fluctuated. And it's tough to reprint menus, update all your online menus. So it is definitely a challenge, but I think it's obviously something that is needed. It's often the case that operator would put almost anything in front of having to make a change in their business. But it's an interesting dynamic because I've lived it.
If the report can provide data points that helps the industry and that helps chefs say, hey, it's not just us, this is a reality. Look at this JBF report. I hope that's a service we can provide.
Yeah, I always looked at, I started to get a refreshing look on this thing when you realize that it's a business. Right, like a lot, everyone's in this because they have a passion. Most people are because they have a passion for cooking, for serving, for just hospitality. And if it was a software company, right, and our margin shrunk from 10% to 5%, I guarantee you they would be looking at all sorts of things they could do to get that margin back. And it's not unique to our industry. So I always thought that was one of the tougher things to do. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Another thing that we're dealing with quite a bit, and it's touched on in the report, is rents. for these restaurants. And coming up, you know, some of these restaurants have been on longer term leases, facing, you know, 3% year increases. Now you're in year eight, you're paying significantly more per square foot. Have you seen any restaurants sort of tailor their model differently, adjust things to maybe fit a smaller footprint or in different markets? What are you seeing out there?
So that's more anecdotal. But some of the things that we're seeing is that we're hearing is trying as much as possible to tie your rent to your revenue, you know, to your profits. That way you're not, you know, you're not stuck if things are not going as well as they should or as you were expecting. What we're hearing, and that's obviously more for new businesses, but a lot of things around tenant improvement funding and those kind of things and negotiating that. I think there's still, I mean, that's one thing we're working on, creating resources around this actually to release this year around what to look for in a lease agreement. What are some of the things that, you know, a white paper that we're working on as a lawyer who can anyone can consult. Obviously, it'll be general, so it works whether you are in New York or you are in Chicago, etc. But what are the things to look for? How to protect your name, for example? What can you ask for in terms of tenant improvements? Those kind of things to hopefully help, because that's been such a challenge. There's so many empty storefronts. It can be so expensive to start a restaurant. I thought that would be one thing that would change. And it hasn't really changed, to the contrary. And restaurants are so vital to neighborhood and communities. So it's really key that independent restaurants remain at the center of communities. And so what can be negotiated with landlords is very important.
Yeah, I love the anecdotal stories. I know we're here to talk about the report, but I love getting your feedback because you're so in it. I need to pick your brain a little bit, but that's the world I live in, right? So my day job is I'm a commercial real estate advisor in New York, and I work with restaurants on their real estate, and it's a challenge, you know. And there are restaurants here in Greenwich, Connecticut, asking $160 a square foot. How do you make that work? What can you ask for? I think that's fantastic. And I think it's a great segue into what we're really going to discuss is the advocacy stuff that you guys are doing and an understanding of what the foundation is here to do for the industry beyond what you may think of them. So can you discuss the impact of this advocacy work and what you're doing to support the industry? I think it's really relevant in this challenging time. So I'd love to hear about it.
Sure. And thank you for asking, because as you mentioned at the top, a lot of people do know the James Beard Awards, but not necessarily everything else that we're doing. We started 11 years ago a chef bootcamp for policy and change, training chefs in advocating for issues they care about in front of their lawmakers. And then since then, we've really developed these programs. We have a robust women's leadership program with support for entrepreneurs. And then we do a lot. We released our first ever policy agenda in September of 2020. This was the first time in our history that JBF decided we're not just training chefs on the issues they care about. Here is where we are putting our stakes in the ground. Here are the issues that we are personally standing behind as well, because you cannot exist as an industry without that anymore. And so some of the things we advocate for that are part of our policy agenda include immigration reforms to make labor for restaurants more accessible, living wage, insurance benefits, especially a lot around mental health insurance, tax credits, composting programs, you know, tax credits or grants for composting programs. We're doing a lot right now around healthy soils. We're doing a lot around the Farm Bill, which includes hunger and nutrition security. So those are all part of our priorities. And the way we do that is through, obviously, our robust network of Chef Bootcamp alums, but really working with chefs in any parts of the country who want to be involved with the work that we're doing, who want to learn how to use their voice, and who want to help us stand behind the issues that we're supporting. Oh, I'm not hearing you, Kyle, anymore.
Sorry. I'm actually, let's see if we can share some of this, because I think it's kind of interesting I think it's extremely interesting for everybody to see this, because I'm just looking here as you're talking, I'm not sure if you can see what I'm looking at here, but this is the Business Essentials and the James Beard Foundation webinars, virtual education. Guys, there is a ton of stuff here. Everything she just touched on, mental health, pandemic impacts and resources. So you have something on benefits here with our good friends from Oyster Sunday. I think this is, I'm just going to take a guess. A lot of you guys, a lot of the listeners out there had no idea that that this existed. So I suggest you dive in. We're going to have this all linked in our show notes. And in addition, I believe you have some events and initiatives coming up. The Financial Literacy Workshop for Women and a Winter Wellness Series. Can you talk about those?
Sure. And while you're on our screen, so the virtual education library lives under the programs tab. So for anyone consulting, all of our industry resources live on the programs tab on our website. And so this is where you find all of our virtual programs, anything that were applications for our programs as well, the policy agenda, information on our boot camps, etc. So this, the programs tab is the one that's very industry focused.
That's great.
So the things that are coming up, we have a financial literacy workshop for women next week, which is for entrepreneurs at any stage of their journey. You have an idea, you don't know where to start. It's a place for you. You've had a business for 10, 15 years. You want a January reboot on, you know, I need to put my finances in order. I need to make this a priority. I'm giving myself 2 days in New York. So we have people from all levels who attend that. And we do a lot around financial literacy for women and non-binary folks specifically, because there is such a, I mean, women still receive only a very small amount of capital from investors and from banks. And there's still a lot of lack of confidence among women and BIPOC owners, even well-established, just because of the, you know, the nature of a lot of these interactions and transactions. So we do a lot to support specifically the people who need it the most from a financial literacy and financial confidence perspective. And then, so that's in New York. We do record the program, and then it's posted on our virtual education library for people who cannot get there. And then the Winter Wellness Series you mentioned, that's a 5-week webinar series that starts January 22nd. And that includes, the first session is actually on taking care of your body in the industry. So stretches specifically for when you're working long shifts.
Cool.
We have a session on herbalism. We have a session on food as fuel, session on mental health, and a session on structuring your business for your staff's well-being as well. And so that's all virtual. It's 1 hour on Zoom every Monday for 5 weeks, and anyone can access from anywhere around the country.
Oh my gosh, that's incredible. I mean, these are things that, you know, I don't know how many folks even realize that these are a necessity, right? And I think that it's amazing that you guys have taken this on and seen it as, you know, something that restaurants are dealing with, right? It's a major pain point and something that this wellness stuff is not really spoken about enough, you know? And I think now that it's becoming a little bit more front and center, and particularly with the James Beard Foundation behind it, I think it's going to really gain some momentum. So I'm really happy to see that. I appreciate you guys putting that out there. What do we miss?
We've been developing a lot of research. So in addition to developing our educational offerings, you know, both presential and virtual, but mostly virtual because we are a national organization, even though we're based in New York, we really reach and work with chefs all over the country. So it's really important for us that our education is accessible to as many people as possible everywhere. And then we've also developed more and more research projects. So the reports we've been mentioning, the industry reports, that's one example. We spend the fall working with a team at the University of Michigan on looking at increasing profitability for independent restaurants. And then we also worked with a team at George Washington University on the economic impact of climate change on independent restaurants. So those are all things that we will be releasing in the next couple of months. And again, to really, there's so much data on chains and high volume restaurants. There's very little on independent restaurants. It's hard to track. So If I can make one ask of your listeners, if you do receive a survey or see a survey coming from JBF, a request for information, please fill it out. Get your voice heard, because capturing data and creating an accurate image of the opportunities and challenges for the restaurant, the independent restaurant industry specifically, is very, very crucial. That's why it will allow us to advocate for legislation that provides funding and support for independent restaurants, for example.
No, and that's a great point. And it's something I think about quite a bit. Is there is so much, when you hear folks talk about restaurants in the press or, you know, LinkedIn, it's always the QSRs, right? It's those types of things. And I think that there's operators, independent operators, look at that as that doesn't relate to me. Yeah. You know, I'm not implementing AI and robots in my restaurant. I need to know how I can get more staff and survive, you know, the winter, my slow season. I will just say, me anecdotally, guys, this is the real deal. James Beard Foundation is here to support the independent restaurants. And with these resources, this is where you're going to find the information that you need. This is where you're going to be able to, on your own time, particularly with that web series you guys have there, or the in-person events, whatever your thing is, surround yourself with this stuff. This is where you're really going to learn about the industry. So I think this is a great point that you brought up, because there is so... All the news you hear about independent restaurants is that they're struggling, but there's nothing saying, okay, what can we do about it? So this is fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
What did we miss? What did I forget to ask you? Let's touch on that. Let's end on that note.
You just made me think, since a lot of your listeners are within driving, commuting distance to New York, at our new public space platform, which is at Pier 57 on 15th Street and the Hudson River, we also have industry programming there. So we launched our report there in December, in mid-December. We're doing an event around restaurant and technology on January 31st there. So we're bringing, while obviously we're doing a lot of virtual content, we are also doing more things in person in New York now. And those industry programmings at platform are always free, because for us, it's really important that the information be accessible. So for anyone who, is within traveling distance to New York, stay tuned to our industry support newsletter, where we publish all of our events.
Yeah, guys, we're going to have links to all this stuff in the show notes, but the website is super sleek. It's very easy to understand. And as a matter of fact, when you go to the website, it prompts you to sign up for the newsletter, and you can toggle which information you'd like to receive. So depending on where you are, what's relevant to you, it's all very clear and very easy to understand. And I think this is phenomenal. Prior to us connecting, I was not even aware of these sorts of resources. So this has been a huge education for me. So I appreciate you taking the time out of your busy schedule to educate myself and our audience.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate the opportunity to share this, because the more people know what we do on the industry support side, the more we can support the industry. And that's really at the core of everything that we do at the foundation. So I want people to know that.
I love that. Guys, you can find them on Instagram at the Beard Foundation. Is that the best place, or the website? Again, everything will be linked there. And thank you, Dr. Anne McBride. Thank you for your time. I appreciate it. And I look forward to a very successful year for restaurants.
Me too, Kyle. Thank you.
Thank you.